Welcome to Horsing Around. This is a really exciting week for horse fans. It is the week of the Delaware County Fair Jug Week races. And joining me to talk about that are the Little Brown Jug Radio Network announcers, Kelly Bell and Keith Gisser. Hey, guys.
Good morning,
hey,
Michelle.
Good
How are you?
Morning, Michelle.
Ah, good, good, good. We are looking forward to next week.
Yeah, we are. Jug Week
Absolutely.
Is the most exciting week of the year in Delaware, Ohio, and kind of all around the world, too, don't you think, Jess?
Absolutely. You know, we got such great support from the Canadian horsemen in this race. It's going to be a very, very interesting year this year. Of course, not just for the jug, but, you know, we're going to have every race every day on the network, and that's going to be about 70 races. So it's not just the Little Brown Jug. We've got the Ohio Breeders' Championships. We've got the Buckeye Stallion Series. We've got the Old Oaken Bucket, the Buckette, the Jugette, on and on, stakes races after stakes race after stakes race. Some of the best horses in the sport, and, of course, the best drivers in the sport as well. Should be a great week.
And I should add, you know, we have the fastest half-mile track in the country, and this is Grand Circuit Harness Racing. You are going to see world championship drivers and the best horses that are out there. It's so exciting. I just love Jug Week.
Absolutely. And, you know, not only is it the fastest half-mile track in the world, but the weather forecast is hot and humid. And when it's hot and humid, horses go faster. It's very simple. We should see some amazing records and some amazing things. I'm looking for a special little thing that may be happening Thursday. We've got an Ohio bred horse called Charlie May, who is unfortunately not eligible for the jug. He'll be racing in the Ohio Breeders' Championship. And many people believe he's the best three-year-old in the entire sport. But unfortunately, he's not eligible for the jug. I look for him to lay down a marker with a very, very fast mile earlier in the card, something for those jug horses to aspire to. And, of course, the jug is unique because of its two-heat format.
Now, is Charlie May a three-year-old?
Charlie May is a three-year-old, yes.
Okay, so the only reason he's not eligible is because he didn't pay the fees that are involved in making a horse eligible, but can't he find a loophole there and he could pay a big premium to
not this
eligible?
Year. Starting next year, he can. Right now, only four horses are eligible. The winners of the Meadowlands Pace, North America Cup, Cane Pace, Messenger. Now, he won the Meadowlands Pace, but was disqualified for interference. And although that has been appealed, it doesn't look like there's going to be a hearing before the jug. So Charlie May, unfortunately, is going to be out of luck as far as the jug goes.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, well, those things happen. But again, you look at a modestly, this horse is not a regally bred horse. He's a modestly bred Ohio bred. And, you know, when you look at him at first, you just don't expect him. So a lot of folks don't make those kinds of horses eligible for the jug. They have to make a decision as yearlings, then another decision at age two, then another decision at age three. There's payments due at each point. Now, next year, a horse who hasn't paid in will be able to supplement for $45,000 starting his three-year-old year in, I believe, February 15th is the final payment. And if he hasn't paid in at that point, he can pay the $45,000, and then he'd be able to get in. So that changes for next year. But for this year, really a wide-open race. I don't even know if we have a favorite, to tell you the truth. Heart of Chewbacca is another Ohio bred, so he'll be facing Charlie May, possibly, depending on how many divisions of the Ohio Breeders' Championship we have. Price, he was not nominated because he comes from connections that tend to nominate everything, every all the big races, but Chewy is not nominated to the jug either.
Guys, let's talk about, you guys are going to be in the center field watching all these races and telling us all out here that can't get to the racetrack what's going on. What's it like being out there hearing those horses run around the track around you?
I can tell you one thing. Last year was so surreal because there were no fans. It was completely quiet out there and we're watching the races and we didn't have that roar of the crowd. But this year, the crowds are going to be back. And I can tell you from experience, the horses react to the crowd. I mean, when they go past that grandstand and around that third turn where everybody's sitting in their folding chairs, they hear the crowd and those horses speed up and perform. So this year is going to be exceptional.
It's going to be very, very different. And, you know, for me personally, it's going to be unusual because I actually own a small piece of a couple of horses who will be racing at Delaware. And that makes it even more exciting. For me, also, the excitement last year was difficult, like Kelly said, with not having fans. But I got a chance to ride in the starting gate last year. And you want to talk about a just great experience. And Mike Welkenberg, the starter at Delaware, he does a great job. He's a great ambassador for our sport. And that gives you a perspective on racing that really changes your view of what's going on. You know, we like to joke about the fact that these horses are only going 30 or 35 miles an hour, but they're doing it with no windshields and no power steering and no brakes. So when you get behind that starting gate, or you get in that starting gate and you're watching the horseman get in behind the gate, you really feel it in that situation.
You know, I don't know what Mike Schnell has planned this year, but in the last several years, he's arranged for listeners of my 96.7 to win an opportunity to ride in the starting gate at Delaware. And I expect he might have something like that planned again this year. So definitely listen in for your chance to ride in the starting gate. It's the most exciting moment of your life outside of your honeymoon. I can promise you that.
I'll vote for the starting car ride. But anyhow, seriously, though, you know, and one of the other things is, you know, it's a lot of races, and it's not just us talking handicapping numbers and horses. We'll have interviews with a lot of the connections. One of the things about the Little Brown Jug is, even though it's one of the great races in our sport, it's not like the Kentucky Derby. Our top horsemen are so accessible, and we'll have interviews with a lot of our top horsemen, either pre-recorded or live in our booth, and as their schedules permit. You know, it's a great way for us to learn. There's every year there's a great human interest story that just jumps up and grabs everybody. And hopefully we'll be able to find that story for you and report it for you, in addition to bringing you the handicapping aspects of the races and some of those other things.
All right. Well, guys, it sounds like you guys are going to have a lot of fun, and we're going to enjoy every minute listening to all 70 some races.
Every race, every day on my 96.7.
All right. Well, from Keith and Kelly to Keith and Jay Wolf, they are going to give me their picks for the top five contenders for the Little Brown Jug. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on this day before the Delaware County Fair starts and all of the races begin.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Good morning.
So, guys, I cannot wait to hear what you guys have picked for this week. I know that one of your top picks from last week is now out of the running. Jay, do you want to go first with your top five and let us know what happened?
Oh, absolutely. What you're referencing, Michelle, is we lost Lawless Shadow. Lawless Shadow was scratched out of the elimination for the North America Cup. They discovered a foot injury, and while they x-rayed it, they found a slight fracture. So Dr. Ian Moore, who is the co-owner and trainer, obviously is doing what's right by the horse and has basically shut Lawless Shadow down for the rest of the year.
Wow. Well, we hope that the horse heals quickly.
Yeah, Dr. Ian Moore has always been a great supporter of the Delaware County Fair and the Little Brown Jug. And he won the jug in the past with Shadow Play. So I know Shadow he was looking forward to coming back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope the horse recovers. Can you recover from an injury like that and get back to racing?
Oh, absolutely. It'll just take some time. I mean, the bad thing is he'll miss out on the jug and the Breeders' Crown and Lexington. So while there's never a good time for an injury, it's a terrible time because all the real money is on the line here in the next few weeks. So unfortunately, just a bit of bad timing. But as I said, Dr. Moore is doing what's right by the horse, and we look forward to seeing Lawless Shadow as a four-year-old.
Yeah. Well, so, Jay, what did that do to your top five?
Well, I left Perfect Sting a solid number one. Perfect Sting was second in the North America Cup, beaten by just 3/4 of a length. He was individually timed in 49-4. So I have Perfect Sting still as my number one. I moved.
And I'm going to agree with Jay on that. Perfect Sting almost kind of by default is my number one. Kind of hard to put a horse number one whose most notable recent win is an elimination of a big race. But there's just nothing else. I'll tell you what. When I sat down yesterday morning and put my top five together, I was in a total quandary, Jay. I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do. Perfect Sting has to be number one, just like I say, by default almost. But this is going to be the most wide open jug in a long, long time, in my opinion.
Yep. Who did you put for your number two, Keith?
I've got Luce Pearlman number two. He's still the fastest of the group. And then I've got Which Way to the Beach number three.
Okay. We vary slightly. I have Which Way to the Beach number two. Was a solid third in the North America Cup final. I have Luz Perlman at number four. I left him unchanged. He did not race last week. Like you said, is the fastest, is coming off his win in the Pennsylvania Sire Stakes. I moved Desperate Man into number three. Desperate Man is not jug eligible, but based on his win in the North America Cup, he is now eligible to be supplemented into the jug for $45,000. That gives us the possibility, Keith, of having two horses supplement to this year's Little Brown Jug.
Right, and of course, that will be great for the purchase because that adds 90 grand to the purse. I personally, as we've discussed all along, in my top five, horses that are eligible to supplement, I'm not putting into my top five. I'm sticking to the eligibles. But certainly, Desperate Man off the win, sharp horse coming off the win at the North America Cup. But he was a bit of a long shot, so I'm not sure 100% how he fits with these other horses. A lot of this is really going to come down to who enters, how we draw, you know, post positions being so important. But like I say, really a wide open affair, but he's certainly worthy of consideration and certainly has the connections to be considered.
Yep. Also, Desperate Man has a great story behind it. Keith, this one was a $20,000 yearling purchase by the trainer, Kathy and John Chetton. They gave part of the horse to Nicole and Paul Davies as a wedding gift. So I want to apologize for the toaster I gave you several years ago.
Well, you know, you take what you can get. And if you want to give me a piece of the horse at some point, I would gladly accept it.
Rounding out my top five, Keith, is I moved I'll Drink to That all the way up from 10th to 5th. What a great drive by David Miller in the New York Sire Stakes final. Was able to get the lead and can control the fractions and defeated Town Gossip, who I have at number six, pretty handily. So, you know, based on the drive by David Miller and some good efforts, I moved I'll Drink to That to number five.
And, of course, she's a horse who's got some Ohio connections. Bob Mondillo, a partial owner of that horse. And, you know, the other thing that's really key to keep in mind, yeah, not just David Miller, who, of course, has a lot of experience at Delaware, but the fact that win in the New York Sire Stakes on a half-mile track, this horse has shown the ability to get around the half-mile track. And although we've discussed the fact that Delaware is really like a 5/8-mile turns with the shorter stretches, but when you have a horse who can get around those turns, even though on paper he looks like he might be a little bit slower, he is certainly a consideration.
Absolutely. And David Miller also drives Perfect Sting. So I guess if you're David, you're hoping that they draw into different eliminations.
Exactly.
As I mentioned, I have Town Gossip as my number six horse, was second in the New York Sire Stakes final 2 weeks ago. I have Rocky Road Hanover 7th in this week. Rocky Road Hanover was 5th in the North America Cup final. I have American Courage at 8. American Courage actually raced Monday night at Yonkers in the open and had the outside post, but still was able to get 4th and raced quite well from the outside. Number 9, I have a Buckabet Hanover, where I left him at last week. And then I move Southwind Gendry all the way from number 3 down to number 10. I know that there's probably a few concerns in the Ron Burke stable based on the recent performances of Southwind Gendry.
Well, yeah, I think there may be. But when you come to Jug Week, it seems like Ronnie's able to get him ready.
Yep. He makes it known that he trains his horses to go to heat. So, you know, I would not be surprised at all if Ron Burke, the trainer, does a few little tinkerings either with his health or his equipment, and we'll have this one ready.
Speaking of Ron Burke, doesn't part of his family, won't they be getting awards this year?
Yes, Ron's father, Mickey, and his mother, Sylvia Burke, will be our Little Brown Jug Wall of Fame honorees this year. It's the first time we've ever put a couple in. And I think it's quite fitting. The Burks have been a longtime supporters of Delaware as owners. You name a stakes race in Delaware and Burke Racing Stable has won. So through a vote of past honorees, it was elected that they were selected as this year's Wall of Fame honorees. And they'll be honored in the log cabin Tuesday night at a private event. And then we'll do winter circle ceremonies with them on Thursday on Jug Day.
Nice.
Definitely well deserved.
This year, our Lady Pace honoree, will actually be Jennifer Brown. And Jennifer is the matriarch of the Brian Brown Racing Stables. And Jennifer was selected as our honoree and for the Lady Pace. And she'll be out there representing all the ladies who are actively involved in the sport. Her race will be the three-year-old Filly Pace for the Ohio Breeders' Championship. So another great award for someone who does an awful lot of work behind the scenes and gets very little credit publicly. But whenever I talk to Brian Brown, he always says, well, Jennifer's in charge of that, or, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do it without Jennifer. So obviously Brian understands the importance of Jennifer. So hopefully with this recognition, Jennifer will get a little bit more credit too, when it comes to people in the sport.
She is definitely the queen of the Delaware backstretch. Even if she can't keep her impatience hanging baskets alive.
So we are also honoring Thurman Downing. Thurman Downing will be our Joe Neville Memorial Award winner. Mr. Downing was a longtime owner. He owned a horse by the name of Melvin's Woe in the mid-70s who won the Little Brown Jug. He was also a philanthropist and was very active on the Little Brown Jug Society, which acts as the governing body for the Little Brown Jug. So it is our pleasure to honor Thurman Downing as well. So we have Mickey and Sylvia Burke as our Wall of Fame honorees. We'll have Jennifer Brown as our Lady Pace honoree, and Thurman Downing as our Neville Memorial Award winner. Thurman Downing was also involved in a very unique case. Keith, if you remember, after Melvin's Woe won the Little Brown Jug, he was standing stud up near Wellington, Ohio, and was horse-napped. There was some ransom. There was some ransom notes and that left, but all good things come to a good end, and the horse was returned unharmed. But it's not often you get a horse napping of a past jug champion.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it sounds like something should come out of some TV drama or something like that, but it's an absolutely true story. You can read about it. Still stories about it online available.
Yep.
All right. So where will you guys be sitting for the races?
I will be in the infield broadcasting every race every day as part of the Little Brown Jug Radio Network, along with my partner, Kelly Bell. And I don't know, Jay's going to be running around like a chicken with his head cut off, most likely.
This chicken probably on Sunday and Monday will be working out of the infield judges' stand. Later on, as the week gets a little bit more crowded and the judges' stand gets a little bit more crowded, I'll return to the press box on top of the grandstand. And there's no better place to watch a race than up top right at Delaware, looking straight down as they cross the line. So look forward to a great week of racing. We hope everyone can join us in person. If they can't, by all means, tune in to WDLR and for Kelly and Keith. And as they said, every race, every day. But it's a great time of year. I always tell people it's like Christmas for me. You wait 365 days for this week, and always a great week and very excited for it.
Outstanding. Looking forward to it. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. Make sure you hydrate, guys. And that doesn't mean absolute ribbon.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me here on Horsing Around, and we'll see you at the track.
Thank you.
See you at Delaware.
And stay right there. When we come back, Kelly Bell is talking to a farrier. You know, one of the most important things for these horses is what they're wearing on their hooves, and he's going to tell us all about it.
With more than 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is over $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing. The mission of the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. To learn more about the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association, go to OHHA.com. That's OHHA.com.
It's mud season. Are you looking for a fix in a muddy situation? Cashman's has you covered, offering innovative mud control solutions. We are also your number one source for the best deals on rubber mats for multi-use flooring, perfect for horse stalls, garages, and gyms. Cashman's Horse Equipment has been serving the equine community for over 40 years. Come and visit our location in Delaware, Ohio, and shop over 10 acres of equine farm and livestock supplies. Shop online anytime at Cashmans.com.
Be sure to catch the new podcast, The Top of the Stretch, presented by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. The podcast keeps fans of racing in the Buckeye State up to date on various topics concerning the sport of harness racing. The news and views of top officials, owners, trainers, drivers, and breeders in Ohio. That's the all-new podcast, Top of the Stretch, on the Facebook page of the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Be there!
Hey folks, it's Kelly Bell here. I've got a special guest today. I've got Mark McCann. He's the fire chief in Centerburg, Ohio, and he's also a farrier with McCann Horseshoeing. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, welcome. Glad to be here, especially Jug Week.
Oh, absolutely, Jug Week. Now, you've got a history with the Little Brown Jug. I do want to talk to you about your work as a farrier, but you were working the paddock at the Jug back in the 90s as an EMS. Tell me a little bit about what that experience was like.
Sure. We start Delaware County EMS. Of course, the fairgrounds is Delaware County. So we were responsible for fair time. Well, one of the specific places you had to have a medic was specifically for the track, for the drivers, was in the paddock. So we got in behind the gate. We would get there long before the races started. And I always worked Jug Day. I worked Jug Day on the medic from late 80s to mid 90s. And I think Greg LeChance, all of those guys were running. And it was just a great, great time and a different way to see the horses than what most people see it.
Well, how is it different from watching in the grandstands?
It's really different. Most people come into the Jug maybe with some coolers and the hopes to win millions of dollars, and they have a favorite spot. Their chairs have been tied up on the fences. Their spot in the grandstands has been secured for years. I mean, you're talking decades. And then all these fancy tents on turn one and two started popping up. The paddock's really never changed. Basically, I call the paddock the business end of the working end of the horse industry. So we always were within inches and feet of some of the greatest drivers and the greatest horses ever to win in the Jug. And you were just kind of standing there and listening to it. There was no pomp and circumstance. We were there to win races. And looking at the horses, the farrier Johnny next to us, one of the legendary guys in the industry, he'd always be teaching us about their feet. And I'd go apply that when I left the paddock.
So you really earned your chops as a farrier studying from one of the great farriers at Delaware. That's pretty impressive. I bet you learned a lot.
Well, right. Johnny was not a big man. He probably stood about 5'5", 5'6", a little shorter than me. But a lot of times, you know, right before these races, the vet would show up and there'd be decisions whether to scratch the horse. Was it lame or not? So Johnny was just a real simple guy, but he made millions and millions of dollars decisions deciding whether these horses can actually run or not. And then in the event if they threw a shoe, Johnny had to take care of it. Nobody else was allowed in the paddock. So he had a lot of responsibility. And he was there all week. Once he was in the paddock, he sat there all week. But Jug Day, him and he had another guy that helped him.
So what would be, you know, one or two of the top tips that you picked up from him as a farrier?
Probably the biggest thing, and I think everybody hears about it, farrying and doing these jobs, is a horse's foot needs to be flat. And a flat foot hits the ground flat. And by doing that, the compression and the concussion is shared evenly throughout that foot and throughout that leg and that knee and shoulder and pastern. When we start monkeying around too much and you get it out of balance, then as the horse hits the ground, no matter what type of ground, then the shocks are shared unequally throughout the horse, which then in turn tends to make them lame or sore.
So let's say a horse is getting ready for one of the big money races, right? And they bring him into the paddock. He's ready to go. He throws a shoe. How quickly can that get fixed before they have to go out on the track?
Well, depends. Well, if they're already in the sulky or in the bike, if they stand real well and fare is comfortable, you can tack that shoe right back on. Those horses were probably shod for the jug. You're probably shoeing those horses 2, 3, 4 weeks before the jug because you don't want to wait till the day of. So it's nothing real fancy. You know, you go ahead and get the shoe, straighten it out, and you can just tack it right back on. A racing plate has nail holes almost all the way around. So normally, if the horse's foot's pretty healthy, you get that shoe back on in under 10 minutes, no problem.
Well, it's fascinating to talk to you about this, and I think I'd like to do an entirely separate show maybe next week or the week after where we can just talk specifically about being a farrier. But for in our last minute or so that we have for this show, do you have a favorite memory or a most exciting moment from the paddock at the Little Brown Jug that you could share with our audience?
I do. And it's has not, unfortunately, not too much with horseshoeing, not too much about EMS. We took some of the drivers in. They were always great and safe. But I remember one time, you know, you see those Outback riders parading the horses around the track. And for most people, you don't see much. And Diane Winters and her partner then and her mom always brought us a lot of food. We were sitting there talking one day. And those girls were not on those horses. And one of the horses broke into the infield and the driver came off. And I'll tell you what, I have never seen two people get mounted that fast, fly across that track. And I'm telling you what, Diane Winters grabbed that horse by the nose and brought it right back to the paddock. And like it was nothing. But if you know anything about horses, to go out on a saddle horse, to go get a buggy horse and drag it back to the paddock.
Yes.
So it was just one of those where you're standing and go, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, the Outriders are absolutely amazing. Hey, Mark, we are absolutely out of time. Thank you so much for being on this episode. Folks, tune in. We're going to have Mark back on again. And are you going to be at the jug this year?
As a matter of fact, we're going to be at the jug this year.
All right. We'll see you at the jug. Thank you so much, Mark McCann.
That concludes this episode of Horsing Around. Join us all week from Sunday through Thursday for Every Race, Every Day, announced by Kelly Bell and Keith Gisser.